The show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yeah, all present and accounted for. Welcome back to the program. It is time for more Bucket Strategy Investing. We're giving you every day the best in money information, I do believe. Brain Trust standing by, ready to help you out this hour once again as Professor Rick Plum returns with me. I'm Johnny Dean. We get set to kick things off. He's here, of course, from Lucia Capital Group as our personal advisor. This hour, we're going to be talking about capital gains tax strategies, among a few different things that are sort of in the periphery of that. So when I say capital gains tax strategies, what do I mean? Well, you might be aware that that gains on capital assets, like stocks, for example, that those are taxed at a different rate than ordinary assets, like your wages or certain interest income. So how do you take advantage of that lower capital gains tax rate? Where should you locate your assets? That's another question to make sure that you're not overpaying taxes. Also, what about that? What's this thing on basis? You need to understand what basis is, especially if you own a home or you're going to transfer title. Anyway, all that stuff's coming up. We're going to talk about it with the professor in just a couple of moments. Now, phone lines are open. Give us a call with your money questions. 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. Or you can head over to wealthed.com. Send us an email at the Find Your Answer link there near the top of the page. Professor Plum, back once again this hour from Lucia Capital Group. Rick will remind you, and I will do exactly the same, that you need a strategy, one that addresses each of your retirement needs. You need to make sure that your strategy it meets your goals, and it's all covered the first time. Of course, what I'm talking about is what we've talked about all week, the bucket strategy. And the Brain Trust advisors at Lucia Capital Group will put one together for you. You can call the advisory team there at this number, the off-air number, 800-644-1150. Talk to any of the Brain Trust advisors about your financial future, and maybe, who knows, maybe give yourself some peace of mind. Again, 800-644-1150, the number at Lucia Capital Group. That's the off-air number. On the air, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. We do have plenty of room on the phones right now. I would suggest you get on board if you have a money question, 877-752-6637. So, okay, we're going to start off here, Professor Plum. We touched on it briefly yesterday, but there are things called capital assets, and there are things called,
non-capital assets.
Ordinary assets. I don't know what it is. But there are different tax rates for things. And I'm going to separate, first of all, long-term capital gains with short-term capital gains.
As you should.
Yes. Long-term capital assets, the assets that you've held for a year, at least a year,
right?
They are taxed at a long-term capital gains rate. That's different from your ordinary income tax rate.
It is. And so you have to understand how to figure out what your tax rate is first. And then you can apply if the capital gain is in this lower, in this particular bracket, you get to pay a lesser tax. It's a kind of a pain. It's kind of hard to understand, and it's not an unlimited issue either. And that's where a lot of people have some difficulty in understanding this. You know, I might be in the 15% ordinary income tax bracket, and for somebody in the 15% ordinary income tax bracket, the capital gain that is part of that taxable income is taxed at a zero tax rate. But so they figure, well, if I'm in the 15%, and I have $1 million worth of gain, I got a zero capital gain tax. No, only the tax that falls into that one bracket. So understanding how you're going to be taxed on a capital gain first requires understanding how you would be taxed on income in general, and then determining what that gain tax is going to be.
Okay, yeah, let's break this down. If you have some very basic example of what we're talking about here.
Well, a married couple can have about $75,000 of taxable income from all sources. So you just start adding up all the income you have on your tax return that goes into the columns, you know, on that right-hand column of your 1040, add it all up and start taking away your deductions, your itemized deduction, your standard deduction, your exemptions, and you come up with a number called your taxable income. That taxable income has different tax rates depending upon how large that taxable income is. A married couple can have about $75,000 of taxable income after all deductions and exemptions and still be in the 15% income tax bracket. So if my taxable income is, call it $70,000, I'm in the 15% income tax bracket. But if 10,000 of that 70 is from a long-term capital gain, or if it's from a what they call qualified dividend, that $10,000 is taxed at a 0% tax rate, because that $10,000 of long-term capital gains is part of that taxable income that's in the 15% zone. And so as long as my taxable income does not exceed the upper threshold for the 15% bracket, whatever capital gains and or qualified dividends that are in that portion of my taxable income will be taxed at 0%, because that's the capital gain tax bracket. Now, if I have $85,000 of total taxable income, and $10,000 of it is capital gain income, $85,000, I'm over the limit. I just mentioned that about $75,000 is a break. It's not an exact number, but we'll just use it for today. And so I'm about $10,000 over the limit. So I'm about $10,000 into the 25% ordinary income tax bracket. So if that had been ordinary income, that extra $10,000 would have been taxed as ordinary income in the 25% bracket. I would have paid $2,500 in taxes on that last $10,000 of income. But because that last $10,000 of income was from capital gains, and they do put the capital gains at the top of the stack so that it's the last income that's taxed, that would be, it would have been taxed at the 25% bracket if it had been ordinary income. But because it's capital gains, mm-hmm. it gets a different tax bracket. And so the way the brackets work there, if the tax would have been 15% if it had been ordinary income or less, then you get a 0% capital gain bracket. If the tax would have been over 15%, but under the 39.6, which is the very highest of brackets we have right now federally, then it's a 15% capital gain, long-term capital gain bracket. Now, if you are lucky enough to have to be in a 39.6% bracket, or if your income would have fallen, it means you're basically making more than $500,000 a year, then that long-term capital gain or qualified dividend that falls into that 39.6 bracket is actually taxed at a 20% long-term or qualified dividend capital gain bracket. So at every level, no matter what the income is, the capital gain portion of the income is a lower tax than the interest, normal mm-hmm. dividends, passive income, IRA distributions, pension income, your own wages. Those are ordinary income, but at every specific level, the capital gain is lower.
Yeah, so let's talk about when we say capital assets, we're talking
stocks, real estate, bonds, not the interest received from the bond, but the investment I make in a bond versus the sale of that bond. I could buy a bond today. Maybe I buy it at a discount. And there's a $10,000 bond, and for whatever reason, I can buy it today for $9,000. And then it matures at $10,000. That appreciation from what I paid for it to what I sold it for or it matured for is a capital issue. The interest that I'm receiving from it every 6 months is an interest payment. Interest is different. Interest is interest.
Ordinary income.
But the actual physical purchase and sale of an investment asset, the bond itself is an asset. And my dollars in, dollars out is a capital expenditure. The interest that I'm earning from it is an interest payment, and that's a different type of income, ordinary income. Just like if I buy a stock. I buy a stock for $10 a share, and I sell it for $15. And now it's a preferred stock, and so I'm going to get a preferred, basically an interest payment. That's a non-qualified dividend. That's going to be taxed as ordinary income. But the purchase and sale of the asset is a capital issue. Real estate. I buy a real estate parcel, and then I sell it later for a gain. That's a capital. But the income that I receive from it while I rent it out, that's passive income taxed as ordinary income.
Yes.
So there's different things going on when we're doing things here.
Yeah, so if you bought a home, a rental property or something for $100,000, and you collect rents on it for, say, 10 years, the rents that you're collecting are ordinary income. That to you is ordinary income.
Yes.
10 years goes by, I decide to sell it. Let's leave out depreciation and all
that
stuff.
I sell it for $150,000.
Or whatever. $150,000 or $200,000, let's say. You now have a $100,000 gain in the property. That $100,000 gain, if you sold it for $200,000, is taxed at capital gains tax rates.
Assuming I held it for more than a year.
Yes. And, well, I said you've had it for 10 years.
That.
Right. So you've held it for that long. Now, you have a $100,000 gain. Your job and everything else – gave you, you know, $50,000, or let's call it $75,000.
Let's call it 50. We've got a total, ignoring the capital gain.
Right. My job and everything.
After all deductions, I had $50,000 of ordinary income. I've got room in the 15% bracket.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in the 15% bracket, but I'm only $25,000. I've got $25,000 of room left in the 15% bracket.
I've got this $100,000 that I'm stacking on top of it now.
So the first $25,000 would have been taxed in the 15% bracket. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it gets a 0% capital gain. When the other $75,000 falls above the 15% bracket, mm-hmm. therefore I have a 15% long-term capital gain.
Okay, that's a lot of information. I know, I mean, unless you're writing it all down, it can be very difficult. But that's how it works, and it's important that you understand, or it's at least important that your advisor understands it. Now we're going to talk a little bit about bases, too. But we got room on the phones, 877-PLANNER. If you have questions on anything else, you can call right now. Lines are open, 877-PLANNER. We're coming right back. There you go. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Right a little lower. We have a request for this one.
This is a great cruising song.
That's what it was built for.
It's just, you know, a lot of songs, you know, I listen to music and I just want to go faster.
This one, you
want to go slower and just let it ride.
Because that's what it was made
awesome.
For. You can't, this
awesome.
Doesn't, yeah, there you go. This is by War.
War.
War. Okay, 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. You have any requests, send them in. Why not?
It's Friday.
All request all day. What the heck? Why not? Sure.
Even if it's Monday, Tuesday, who cares? It's all request day.
Doesn't matter. Okay. All right, back to the phones. We're gonna cover some more of this stuff on basis, tell you what we mean by that, because there were some questions on this fairly recently posed to the Brain Trust as to what do we mean by basis. We talk about basis. You get a step up in basis. What's a step up? So we'll talk a little bit
what's
about that.
What's basis and what's a step
and
up of that
step
basis?
Step up in basis. Oh, and why is it important? It is important. Actually, step up in basis is wonderful in many instances. So we'll tell you what that is. Okay, let's get back to the phone lines. Lee, we'll put you up next in Las Vegas. Hi, Lee.
Hi, John and Professor. I just had a question. You touched on the zero capital gains tax rate for married individuals being $75,000. What about singles? And what do they constitute as being a qualified dividend to participate with that?
Okay, sure. The capital gain, the brackets, we're just talking about the 15 bracket and up, for a single individual is right at half of that for a married couple. So it's right around $35,000. Well, that's actually $37,000. I think it's $37,400 this year. So that's taxable income. That's not just gross income. That's taxable income. So that's after deductions, after exemptions. And the deductions and exemptions basically reduce the ordinary income items first. And so if I've got, you know, if I'm a single individual and I've got $40,000 of wages and then another 10 of capital gains, but then I've got my standard deduction, my personal exemptions in it. Those basically reduce my ordinary income. Let's say that those total $10,000. That takes my ordinary income of 40 down to 30. And now the rest is capital gain on top of that. So they do let you use the exemptions and deductions against the higher taxable item first. And the capital gain is taxed on top of that. So it does help a little bit in that area. Now, as far as a qualified dividend, basically, a qualified dividend is a dividend that's issued by a company where the company has already paid or should have paid the taxes on that dividend. A company that earns a profit, you've got, you know, IBM, Exxon, you know, any of these big, any C corporation, a corporation that has its own tax identity, not a pass-through entity like an S corp or a REIT or something of that nature, but a corporation that has its own tax bracket. When they show a profit, they have to pay tax on that profit. When they issue a dividend out to the shareholders, that dividend is not a deductible expense to the corporation. So a corporation has $500 million of profit after all their expenses, whatever the case may be, and they have to pay tax on that $500 million. If they issue a dividend of $400 million out to their shareholders, that doesn't affect the tax they have to pay. They still have to pay tax on whatever their taxable income was. So the idea is that that tax bracket is like 35%. What the idea of a qualified dividend is, it's to stop the huge tax on the profits of a corporation. Before we had qualified dividends, the corporation paid 35 cents on the dollar on that particular taxable event. And then you received it as a dividend, and you paid another 25%, 28% at your whatever your income tax rate is. And just on the federal side, we are at 60% of a dollar of profit being taxable. So the dividend that's coming from a taxable event, or a corporation that pays taxes, has a lower capital gain. Basically, it's taxed at the long-term capital gain rate. So it may be taxed at 35% at the federal, at the corporate level, and then 15% at your bracket. So it's only a maximum of 50% on that dollar of profit. That's the idea. But basically, it's an entity that it's its own, a dividend that's paid by its own, by an entity that pays its own taxes. An S corporation, small business, there is no tax bracket at the corporate level. It all shows up on the individual's tax bracket. A partnership flows through. There's no taxable entity to pay the taxes. A REIT flows through. A preferred stock, the dividend is actually deducted like an interest payment, so that doesn't get you the lower capital gain treatment because it wasn't the double taxation.
Well, I appreciate your clarifying that, and it makes a whole lot of sense, and I do appreciate it. So whatever capital gains I had last year, I think follow into the 0%. So I'm very fortunate in that respect, and I appreciate the answer, and thank you for clarifying it.
Okay, Lee, thank you for the call. And it was a lot of information there. But this is sort of you know, a 90-second version of what we've kind of been talking about this hour so far. So thank you, Lee. I appreciate it. Let's move along. We got time? Sure. Sam up next in Seattle, Washington. Hi, Sam. How can we help you today?
I helped. Thank you very much. Hey, pertaining to what you were just speaking, when you do your own taxes and import and whatever, is all of what you just spoke of taken care of by the tax people, like the Intuit or TurboTax or whatever?
To be honest, I don't know. I don't know whether they're importing the front page of the 1099 only or whether they're importing in the supporting reports. Because right now we have this problem, a lot of people have this problem, where we have a personal portfolio and we get the 1099 that says that you know, we've got our interest payments, our dividend payments. That should all be correct. But when we get down to the 1099B, where it's the sales proceeds from selling a capital asset, the stock and bond sales that occurred during the year, where we have either a gain or a loss on those sales, the 1099 shows the entire proceeds for all stock sales that were created for the year. And then there's another box that says this is the basis. The basis is what you paid for it or what your starting point for taxation is. If I paid 10 bucks a share for it, you know, my basis should be 10 bucks. But the basis may not include every sale. There's something called covered and non-covered sales, and only the covered sales are listed in the basis area. So if all the tax software is doing is importing in the front page of the...
It's missing that?
Then it's missing potentially some of the basis information, and you may be paying too much in taxes on that those proceeds. And so you have to look at the supporting reports. Sometimes those 1099s are like an inch thick if you've got a big portfolio. And you look for the final page that says this much was covered and this much is non-covered. What covered and non-covered deal with are assets where the brokerage company is required to maintain information and report information on what you paid for it. But there's a lot of stocks that were purchased prior, or assets that were purchased prior to the law going into effect in 2012. And so if the stock was purchased prior to the law going into effect, the brokerage company has no idea maybe what your basis was, and so they don't report it. Of course, they don't tell you that they didn't do that, other than you must know about it to look in the supporting reports.
So what you're saying, don't trust the don't trust the tax software all the time.
I would say, trust but verify.
Verify. Okay, thank you so very much.
President Reagan, isn't that what that was?
Yes.
Yeah, trust but verify. Well, that's true. Now oftentimes you have like W-2s, I know. There's a little number on them, and if you type the number in, it will be able to, it takes the entire W-2. That may not necessarily
be true.
But the
W-2 is a one-page document.
So I'm saying it may not necessarily be true for those 1099s.
And that not only the answer to the software on that.
Yeah, we haven't worked with that, so okay. Sam, thank you for the call. 877-PLANNER. We have another Sam. We've also got Tony and Peter and others. Stick around.
Bucket Strategy Investing. We're coming back right after this. Early and always welcome. Here we go. Two good songs so far. See if we can keep it up now. Get you dancing, doesn't it? That's right. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Qualm, Rod Stewart, Paces, and everybody. We got some folks on hold. We're going to get back to the phones right now. 877-PLANNER, our number. If you have any questions on anything at all, whether it's capital gains. We do have more to say, by the way, on capital gains, taxes, and basis, and all that stuff. But I want to get to some of these calls. Folks have been hanging on for just a little while. 877-752-6637. That's the number you call, 877-PLANNER. Let's see. Hang on a second, Sam, because Mark in Austin had called before you, so we're going to get into these in order. Mark is up next in Austin, Texas. Hi, Mark.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Rick and Johnny, appreciate you taking the call.
Sure.
Question I have is on RMDs. Okay. Let's say at the end of 2015, you've got a traditional IRA and you have a 401k, and you calculate each one separately. Uh-huh. And let's say the traditional IRA has some assets that you really don't want to sell. You can take your RMDs from the 401k, and then in addition to that, is it possible to transfer direct basis from the 401k to the traditional IRA and then withdraw the amount from the traditional IRA? Or does the money already have to have been there? Or can you kind of, like I say, transfer new money and then withdraw it and have that qualify as the RMD?
Well, did you completely eliminate the 401k and move 100% of it into the IRA?
No. I've got...
Then it doesn't count.
Them separate. I got both of them. And I take the full RMD that's calculated from the 401k, take that out.
Got that done.
In addition, take extra money, do a direct transfer into the traditional IRA, and then withdraw it from the traditional IRA to satisfy the previous year's RMD calculation?
No, because you still have the two different accounts. I mean, I see what you're trying to do, but you've got some stocks or something inside the IRA that you don't want to sell, right?
Right. I don't want. Yeah, I want to
just
keep, I
distribute
keep the
those
stuff in the traditional IRA, and so by taking it out of the 401k, putting it in the traditional IRA, and then withdrawing it from the traditional IRA, wouldn't that satisfy both RMD calculations?
I don't think it would ever get caught because you're going to show an IRA distribution, you're going to show a 401k distribution. I don't know if your 401k will let you do that for one thing. But the other thing is, if you really want to keep these stocks and you want to keep these assets for a long time, just distribute the stock to yourself from the IRA, and that will satisfy the required minimum distribution if the value is high enough. Don't sell them. Just move them to your personal brokerage account.
Okay. Yeah, I understand. The problem is what I wanted to do is use that for the charity.
The qualified amount. Charitable?
Yeah, qualified charitable.
Distribution.
So I didn't even want to run it through the tax return.
Well,
that was kind of the idea.
Oh.
So you want to keep the stock, so you don't want to transfer
it
to yourself, but you don't have any other cash.
Just send the cash to the charity as an RMD.
Well, let me ask you this.
Personal funds.
Why do you still have the 401k? Just move the entire 401k to the IRA and have it much easier to deal with.
I understand. The reason is I like the 401k stable value account, and I can't find something comparable in the traditional IRA.
Yeah, that
you probably won't.
Yeah.
It should qualify it. I can't see why it wouldn't, because you are ultimately taking a distribution from the IRA, but I can't say for a fact that that's legal. I've never heard this one before, but you are taking a distribution from the IRA. You are taking a distribution from the 401k. At some point, it's going to switch around a little bit because your RMD is going down on the 401k. I don't see where it's going to be a problem, but I don't know for a fact. I've never looked into that.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of a unique strategy.
It is.
Trying to find a way to handle this, and it looks like this would do it. And as long as the money doesn't have to have been there in 2015, I think we should be okay.
I mean, there's money there, obviously, because you're going to put enough money over to the IRA to do the distribution, the qualified charitable distribution going to the charity. Yeah, that's an interesting. I've never thought
of
that one.
Well, maybe try it and see what happens.
Oh.
Hey, well, maybe you can hire me as a consultant.
Well, let's wait a couple years to see if you're not in jail for doing it.
Oh, you won't get
him
in jail. He's kidding. He's joking.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Mark, thank you for the call.
I'd have to go back and look at the regs on what, I mean, it should. He's basically taking a distribution from his IRA.
Well, you're showing a distribution from the IRA.
Yeah.
You're showing a distribution from the 401k.
Yeah. I don't see where this doesn't work, but then that doesn't mean there's not
doesn't
some
mean that there's something
little...
in there where they'll disallow something and say you haven't taken enough out of your 401k.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing they could say is it's some kind of a step transaction and it was really a distribution from the 401k. They're never going to catch it.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean,
we don't know for sure. We don't know. We don't want to go on record as saying that. But
yeah.
You just did.
Sort of.
We don't think so. I
immediately backtracked on it.
Okay. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. Tammy, hang on, guys. I've got Sam up next in Saybrook, or maybe Old Saybrook, Connecticut. Hey, Sam, how can we help you today?
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Professor, as you so succinctly explained to us about 15 minutes ago, the tremendous benefits of investing capital assets in taxable accounts.
Yeah.
And when you figure in the fees, the tax savings, and the step-up in basis that you get, why would anybody want to purchase a variable annuity for a long-term investment? Anybody, whether in a low bracket or a high bracket. I can't think of one reason. Could you explain that for me, Professor?
I really don't, because I side with you on this one. For purely growth-oriented investments, I do not like a variable annuity. I do not think that they make any sense for the tax-deferred growth to be then treated as ordinary income, plus the ongoing fees of the variable annuity. So I do not like variable annuities for their original intent, the ability to have a tax-deferred growth account. I think a good tax-managed personal investment account is a better deal if we're looking for long-term growth than a variable annuity. The only thing that I would look to a variable annuity to do is if I wanted a lifetime income. And it's very similar to the index annuity concept where I have an income base, I have a guarantee that if the cash value goes to zero, I'll maintain an income for the rest of my life, maybe the rest of my wife's life as well if we do a joint rider. And at least with the variable annuity, I have a chance, may not even be a good one, but at least I have a chance that my cash value will do better than the income base. Whereas with an index annuity, I have no chance that the income base will ever go up more. That's the only time that I would look to use a variable annuity with very, very rare situations. Now, there are some variable annuities out there that have some long-term care riders that if I already have a lot of deferred growth, I might use one for that. So there's some very one-off type of reasons.
But for the most part, no.
But just for the idea, if I have $100,000 to invest today that I'm going to invest for 20 years, and I have a choice between doing it in a personal portfolio or a non-qualified annuity, I'm not going to use the annuity.
Yeah. Do you know how many financial planners I have spoken to that tried to convince me that I should buy a variable annuity as opposed to keep an X number of dollars in a taxable account? I really appreciate your honesty, Professor, and your intelligence and your insight on this. I really do.
Somebody mark that down. I need to replay that for my wife.
There you go. Yeah. Sam, I thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
I actually was years ago speaking. I was asked to speak at a last minute for a group of people in the industry.
You talking about this long time ago?
This was a long time ago.
I know which one you're talking about. Yeah.
I was asked on a Friday to speak in Phoenix on Saturday, and I didn't even know who I was speaking. I just knew it was an industry group. And the question came up, well what, using a variable, this is back in the 90s, what about a variable annuity? And I said, I wouldn't use one, ever. I mean, they don't make any sense to me. And so I basically brought up all the reasons why I didn't care for it for the reasons that they were talking about. And then as I got done, the promoter for this whole industry organization came up and said, now just remember the words of the speaker don't necessarily, you know, support our views as the variable insurance, variable annuity sales group.
Yes,
I was speaking
the
to
the variable annuity sales association.
I was speaking to an insurance industry, which was basically a variable annuity group of individuals, and they were all talking about how to sell variable annuities. Well, they should have known who I was.
Well, honestly, I mean, the original intent was to sell these as a tax-deferred vehicle.
Well, and back in the day when the capital gain rates and the ordinary income rates were the same, there was a marginal argument for it, especially if you were in a very high bracket during your earning years and you were going to be in a low bracket later on, because even then the fees were not the drawback, the taxation.
Yes.
But as we've gone through our history, and we've created much more efficient uses, you know, ETFs, index funds, and things of that nature, more efficient tax systems. We have this capital gain rate that is much lower. I'm just not a fan of the variable annuity anymore for that purpose.
Exactly. And there are fees associated with these things. Now, they can be used for other purposes.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We should make clear.
You buy them for the bells and the whistles that do have a good impact
exactly.
on your overall portfolio.
Exactly. So we're not throwing out the whole thing. Okay, Tammy in Sacramento, we will get to you next. Don't go away. That's an order. Coming back with more Bucket Strategy Investing. Now, here's some Santana.
Yeah.
Were you asking about Santana
yeah,
earlier?
For whatever reason, I know Low Riders War, but I always think of Santana when I hear that song.
You think of Carlos Santana as singing Low Rider.
Not singing it, just the music reminds me of, I don't know why, it just
okay,
does.
Well, it's not.
And
yeah.
so I asked, I said, you know what? How about some Santana today?
Okay, well, you
all
got
request,
it.
You know, it's an all request day.
It's all request day, that's right. You call, you get a song, too. How's that? Okay, 877 Planner. By the way, there's another hour coming up in many, if not most, cities across the country where you can see or hear our show. We're going to get into some of this step up and basis stuff that I talked about. We do take calls first in this show, so we will push that, I suppose, to next hour. We've got some more emails to get to, too. If you want to email us, you go to our website, wealthed.com. Heading next, Sacramento, California, Tammy. Hi, Tammy.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions. The first question, you're talking about the basis and step up. And as I have personal investment on stock, if I own my living trust, I give it to my kids, will be step up, or whatever they have, that day, the cost will be their basis.
Right.
If I put on trust to my grandkids, would that be the same, what I call benefit, or is it step up?
Oh, yeah. The step up isn't based on who receives it. It's purely on the ownership. The basis will be changed to the value at the date of death on every asset that the person who died owns. It doesn't matter who it goes to, whether it goes to charity, whether it goes to your spouse, whether it goes to grandkids, a twin cousin-in-law. It doesn't matter who it goes to. It's the ownership. If I die, or I should say I die, everything that I own gets a new basis. Everything that I own as a capital asset, my real estate, my stocks that I own. Now, tax-deferred accounts are a different game. That's a whole different world. But every personal asset that I own has a new basis.
Okay, my next question is about tax deferral. I have a pension from the place I work, mm-hmm. and I have 403 and IRA also. The question I have, I'm planning to retire next year, so I don't have any income at all. I only get my late husband Social Security.
Right.
And maybe some of my investment,
income.
Interest or dividend, around like $6,000 per year for those 1099. You're talking about capital gain if you're under 15%. I'm a single, so you say approximately 37,000, or the bracket would be tax zero for
right.
capital gain.
That's a taxable income.
My question is, if I roll over like 20,000, would I be qualified for roll over to from IRA or 403 to Roth IRA? Would I be eligible under that bracket as tax zero?
Well, no. I mean, that's taxable income as ordinary income. That's not a capital gain. That's not a qualified dividend. The movement of assets from an IRA, 403B, 401K, or anything like that, either to a Roth or to you personally, the distribution or the conversion of that asset is a taxable event. So it's going to be part of your taxable ordinary income. Now, to the extent that you have deductions, you can use those deductions and your personal exemption to reduce the taxable event. So if you were to convert, let's say you have absolutely no other income, but you have $6,000 of capital gains from the 1099 that you were talking about, and a $20,000 conversion to a Roth, and you have just the standard deduction and the personal exemption. The standard deduction and personal exemption total a little over $10,000. So that's, let's just call it 10. You did a $20,000 conversion, ordinary income. 10 of it will be exempt, it'll be, you know, eliminated from a taxation standpoint, but you still have $10,000 of income from as a taxable income that you'll have to pay tax on. Plus that $20,000 of conversion will have an impact on the Social Security that you're receiving and could subject some or at least a portion of that Social Security to taxation as well. So it won't be just the 20, it could be 25, 28,000 or so when you include some of the Social Security being a taxable event as well.
I see. So Social Security is not income earnings, that will be compounded to as my ordinary income?
Social Security may be taxable based on other sources of income. If all you have is, you know, $6,000-$7,000 of other income, it's unlikely that any of your Social Security would ever be taxable. But if you have $20,000 of taxable income from a Roth conversion, and you have $20,000-$30,000 of Social Security, then yes, some of your Social Security will be taxable. How much? Well, it depends on how much Social Security you're receiving and how much other incomes you have. That capital gain, that even if the capital gain is taxed at a 0% bracket, that's not the issue. The capital gain itself shows up on the tax return, and that shows up in the formula to determine whether or not your Social Security is taxable or not. So all of these things come into play. And so you would need to sit down with somebody who can go through what's happening. First off, you got to figure out where the money's coming from to live. You got Social Security, you've got these other assets. How much do you need to live? Let's set up a plan to give you the income that you need to live. And then let's look at how do we make it as tax efficient as possible.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a very good answer. And the Social Security, based on your income, what is the taxable on Social Security, the maximum?
Well, the maximum event is that 85% of your Social Security would become taxable. So how much 85%. In Social Security do you receive every year?
Okay, I just started this year. My husband passed many, many years ago, about $25,000.
Okay, so...
And I just started collecting when I turned 65. I just saw it last year.
Hey, I tell you what, Tammy, hang on a second. Have you got a quick answer here? Or?
At worst case scenario, a little over 21,000 of your Social Security could actually be taxable. So, but that would take about, you know, $30,000-$40,000 of other, maybe $50,000-$40,000 of other income.
I'll tell you
it's a sliding scale.
Yeah, if you want to hang on, we can get you some more information here during the top of the hour. If you want to hang on a minute, we can talk to you during the news. So if you have some more questions, stick around. I just got to take a break here for the top of the hour. And there's another hour coming up, by the way. If you need the brain trust off the air, specifically Professor Plum or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group who can talk to you about all this stuff that we just talked about on the show the whole hour, reach them at 800-644-1150. 800-644-1150. Our number on the air, 877-PLANNER. And we're coming back for more right after this.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.